Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew.
Glory to you, O Lord.
When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up the mountain, and after he had sat down, his disciples came to him. He began to teach them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they who are mourned, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the land. Blessed are they who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the clean of heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are they who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when they insult you and persecute you and utter every kind of evil against you falsely because of me. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward will be great in heaven." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
When I was in high school, I attended public high school, North Decatur High School, and so because of that, we had to attend our CCD courses every Wednesday night to get our Catholic education in on the side. And so you can just imagine all these farm boys and gals getting together on Wednesday night for that CCD program. Now, the guy that they got to teach this class to us high school kids, his name was John Schwering. Now, John, good old farm boy that he was huge. I mean, this guy was about 6'4", probably about 300 pounds of nothing but muscle. I mean, this guy was enormous and was really, when you think about it, the perfect guy to teach high school religious education. You did not want to stray too far from the beaten path when it came to John, because he would put you right back in the marching line, you know. If you got frustrated easily, and then he'd make sure that you knew where you stood. And so John taught this class and was very intimidating, which was, like I said, a good thing. However, every once in a while, he would try to engage us in some fun activities to try and teach us about our faith. He would do this on occasion by having these trivia nights where we would get together, and of course, it would be Catholic trivia. We'd split up into teams, compete against each other to answer these questions. And during one of these Wednesday nights that we were having a trivia night, my team was dominating, and we were doing an amazing job, back-to-back-to-back answers correct. We were way ahead of the other team. And one of the questions that came up, which I heard, and I was like, "Hey guys, we got this one in the bag. Like, this is an easy one." He asked us the question, "How many Beatitudes are there?" I said, "8. There are 8 Beatitudes. Everybody knows in the Catholic Church there are 8 Beatitudes. You look in the Gospel, there it is, 8 Beatitudes. There are 8. Wrong. He says there are 9 Beatitudes. I was like, "What planet are you coming from?" You know, I was raised in the faith. I know there's 8 Beatitudes. It's always described as 8 Beatitudes. Where does the 9th one come in? And so we got to arguing. He pulled out the Bible, and he opened it up to today's gospel, the Gospel of Matthew, and he pointed out, and he said, "How many blesseds are listed here? Count them out." Sure enough, there are 9. Blessed are those listed in that Gospel of Matthew. So I was kind of taken aback by this, you know, and at the end of it, he was just like, "Dan, simmer down. You got the answer wrong. You know, we're moving on. We're doing the next question." But I couldn't quite move on. Years later, after this took place, I was in seminary training to be a priest. We had the opportunity to travel to the Holy Land, of all places, to follow in the footsteps of Christ. And while we were over there, we had an awesome opportunity to be on the Sea of Galilee. And we stayed the night at this hotel/retreat center that was up on the Mount of Beatitudes. This was the very hillside, the very mountain that we hear in today's gospel, that Christ went up and he taught his disciples the Beatitudes. And on this site, there's a chapel. The chapel is octagon-shaped in structure, meaning that it has 8 sides. When you go inside of it, on each of the 8 walls, There is one of the Beatitudes, meaning that there were eight Beatitudes listed there. Up in the ceiling, they had these eight stained glass windows there, each one of them depicting in some physical manner the eight Beatitudes. So I'm here, sitting here with my phone, like taking pictures, you know, of all this stuff. And when I got back to Enochsburg, I was like, hey, John, I got some pictures I want to show you, you know. So I go through and I tell him about this story, you know, and the eight-sided chapel and everything. And first thing he said to me, he was like, man, you hold a grudge. But the second thing he said, which I think was a little bit more profound, he said, what if, Danny, what if Christ wanted to teach us an infinite number of Beatitudes, but he only had enough time to teach us those eight? What if there was an infinite number of Beatitudes that he had in store for us, but we only ever hear about those eight? Do you feel blessed? Blessed are they who? Do you feel blessed? Many of us, I think, would answer that question here in the United States with a resounding yes. We do feel blessed. We feel like God has blessed us in our life with so many good things. We could cite the roof over our head and the house that we live in. We could cite the car that we drive, the money we have in the bank, the food on our table, the family and friends that we have. And we would say yes. Yes, we are blessed. There was a priest years ago who gave a homily about a high school student that he went to school with who was also very blessed. This guy that this priest went to high school with, he was an amazing athlete. He was a gymnast. And he was very specialized on the uneven bars. That was kind of his masterpiece. That's what he stuck with. And he trained all the time for this. In fact, many people thought that he was going to be on course to be on the next Olympic team. This was back in the 70s. For the United States, that he'd be one of the youngest members of the gymnast team for the United States. And he knew this about himself. You know, he knew that he was very gifted in this. He knew that he was very blessed with these abilities to be able to perform these amazing feats on the uneven bars. And because of this feeling that he had for himself, there was also a sense of arrogance that came with that, an entitlement. He thought that he was better than everybody else. And so the priest described that this guy was not very popular in high school. Many people thought that he was full of himself. They didn't like hanging around him. Not to mention, he just spent all of his time in the gym working on this skill that he had. In fact, he was so arrogant in his abilities that he decided he was going to do this new maneuver, this new dismount, when he was done with his usual routine. And the coaches warned him against it. Actually, they were like, we don't advise this for any of our students because it is such an advanced technique that it's very unsafe. We don't think that you'll be able to master it soon enough to be able to perform this. And they really, you know, warned him about that. But in his arrogance, he thought, I can do this. I can train enough. I can get strong enough. I can make this dismount work. It involved extra spins and all these extra things, and it was a very difficult thing to land it, to really stick the landing. And so one day at practice, against his coach's wishes, actually I think without their knowledge, he decided he was going to attempt it. So he goes through his normal routine, and he gets to that spot in the routine. He lets go of the bar, and he lands on his head. He ends up breaking his neck. The paramedics come in, they're able to save his life, thank goodness. But they also tell him that he will never walk again, he'll never have the use of his arms again, so being a gymnast was out of the question. That for the rest of his life, he would be paralyzed from the neck down. And he was angry. He was angry at God, angry at the coaches, the trainers, angry at the school, angry at the equipment, angry at everybody but himself. Years later, the priest who was given this homily, he said that he ran into this classmate of his. And he saw him in a wheelchair, and he had one of those baggies next to him because he no longer had control of his bowel movements even. And so he had to have that next to him. And yet he had a smile on his face. And the priest was very confused by this. He went up to this individual, started talking to him, asking him about, you know, what's been happening in his life, where has he been, you know, what's going on. And the guy said, you know, When I had that accident, it was very devastating. It was a tragedy to my life. I thought about taking my life multiple times, but I couldn't because I didn't even have use of my arms or legs. I wanted everything to end. But then as I sat there in the hospital, I had all this free time that I never had before because I was always working out, I was always training. The only way I could entertain myself to pass the long hours in the hospital was to read the Book of Saints, read the lives of these holy men and women and how they devoted themselves to God. And then he said, I started to do something I've never done before. I started praying to God. At first it was in anger, yelling at him, blaming him, asking him, why would you allow this to happen? But slowly I began to realize that that accident was a blessing in disguise. That if that had never happened, I would have never discovered God. I would have never discovered this deep sense of meaning and purpose in my life, this deep connection with someone so profound and so beautiful and so in love with me. And he said, I realize now that back then I was a big jerk. I was someone that no one wanted to hang around with. I would have spent my entire life alone. I would have died alone. It would have been a very shallow, terrible existence. And then he said to the priest, I realized that it was only in my brokenness that I could receive God's blessing. It was only in my brokenness that I could see how God was working in my life. Many of us in our own lives have had an experience of a blessing in disguise. In the moment, we don't realize why it's going on. We question God. We wonder why. And it's only years later that we look back and we see God's hand at work. A blessing in disguise. In today's gospel, what Christ is trying to do for us, he's trying to open our eyes by listing these Beatitudes so that we don't have to wait years and years to see those blessings in disguise, that in fact, when they happen the first time, we'll recognize that everything that happens to us is a blessing, whether it's apparent to us and obvious, or whether it is something that's hidden and disguised from us. Look at the Beatitudes he gives us. He says, blessed are the poor. Blessed are those who are persecuted. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Basically saying, blessed are the miserable. Blessed are those who are in terrible straits. Blessed are those who are not enjoying their life, who do not understand. But blessed are they because God has a bigger plan than we could possibly realize. Blessed are they because at the end of the day, when we make it to heaven, we're going to see this massive plan that God has that we couldn't even fathom here on earth. This magnificent tapestry that he has put before us that in hindsight makes perfect sense. And so I challenge us today to look at our lives closely, to recognize that everything that comes to us is from God, a loving God, a God who loves us so much that he will literally do anything to get our attention so that we can experience his love. Do you feel blessed? Well, you are. You really are. Amen.